A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be hanging out with Toby Leary, owner of Cape Gunworks, head of the Civil Rights Coalition in Massachusetts, Second Amendment defender. And boy, we've got a lot to talk about with Toby, including this shooting in Cambridge, Massachusetts on Monday afternoon. You know, normally we do our recidivist report at the end of the program, but I got to mention this because we talk about it with Toby. Here's one of the headlines. Accused Memorial Drive gunman Tyler Brown tried to kill Boston police officers in 2020. This 46-year-old who just started opening fire randomly at motorists on Memorial Drive in Cambridge, a convicted felon, I think at least twice over, maybe three times over. And yeah, in 2020, did almost the same thing. Started shooting randomly. Police respond. He starts shooting at police officers. He is eventually taken into custody. And he's sentenced to 5 to 6 years. Prosecutors asked for at least 10 years behind bars. Judge said, nah. I mean, look, he's got kind eyes. I don't know if the judge actually said that. But for whatever reason, judge denies the prosecutor's request, cuts it basically in half, and sends Tyler Brown to prison for 5 years, which, of course, doesn't really mean 5 years, right? So he was out on parole when he somehow got a hold of a rifle in Massachusetts, even as a convicted felon. And then, again, just started shooting at random. We could also tie in our armed citizen story to this, too, because one of the individuals was a Massachusetts state trooper who responded. But there was also a retired Marine who has his license to carry. So he's an armed citizen who also engaged Tyler Brown. Tyler Brown injured two people. But this could have been so much worse were it not for the fast reaction of this armed citizen. In fact, there was a woman who's quoted in one of the local news stations who said this guy saved her life. That as she's running for cover, she sees him, you know, engage the shooter, and she totally believes that her life was saved because of the presence of that armed citizen. So, you know, as I told Toby, I mean, this story, this incident, it touches on so many aspects of what we talk about as Second Amendment supporters every day, right? The failure of gun control laws to impact violent criminals, the importance of an armed citizenry, the soft on crime policies that return violent offenders to the streets long before any lessons have been learned. And this is one of the topics of conversation with Toby Leary and I today. It's where we get started. Take a look and a listen. Toby, it's good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the program today.
My pleasure, Cam. Anytime. I'm happy to come on and say hello.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about. In fact, we were discussing potential topics yesterday, and then one more got added to the list, and we should probably start there. This crazy incident in Cambridge, Massachusetts, just across the river from Boston yesterday. You've got a 46-year-old guy with an extensive criminal history, multiple violent felonies. In fact, I think it was just 5 years ago, he was sentenced for randomly shooting at people and then firing more than a dozen shots at responding officers. He gets 5 years in prison for that. I don't know how long he's been out, but somehow this convicted felon manages to violate Massachusetts gun laws, illegally acquire a gun, starts randomly shooting at motorists, injures two people. Before a Massachusetts state trooper and a retired Marine who has his license to carry engaged this guy, shot him multiple times. I think he survived and was taken to a local hospital. You know, Toby, I mean, this encompasses so much, right? We've got the failure of Massachusetts gun laws to stop a violent criminal, the difficulty in becoming an armed citizen in Massachusetts, and then, again, the fact that an armed citizen was able to at least help prevent this crime from going any further.
Yeah, it's like where to start. You know, this is the laundry list of things that government tells you isn't going to happen as long as they can enact strict gun control. And here we are. We're, you know, you and I have been preaching to the choir for decades about how, you know, we all know that gun control produces this very thing, like making it harder for good people to protect themselves in a horrible encounter like this, doesn't change or alter or deter the career criminals who manage to get guns that would probably be hard for a lawful, peaceful citizen in Massachusetts to get. But yet he, as you pointed out, started his parole in 2026. So just this year, apparently he started, you know, meeting with parole officers. And here he is walking down Memorial Boulevard in broad daylight with an AR-15 style rifle, which people and the anti-gunners love to hate. But the truth of the matter is, it would be hard for a lawful, peaceful citizen of Massachusetts to obtain that gun. But apparently, if you're a career criminal and you don't follow the law and you don't worry about things like, you know, felon in possession charges,
right,
you can get those guns. And then you can walk down the middle of the road in broad daylight shooting at people randomly. And that, I think, is, you know, the horrible outcome of the rhetoric that we've heard for decades from media and politicians trying to lay the blame for these type of events on the lawful, peaceful citizen. And I think, you know, more of the same is going to continue to happen if the revolving door justice system here in Massachusetts continues to have its way. And, you know, I was reading comments and people like, what is this guy doing out of bed? You know, how fire, impeach the judge, everything. I said, this is a daily occurrence in Massachusetts that we see people with long rap sheets rearrested and reoffending. And, you know, everyone wondering why they're out on the street because of the justice system here in Massachusetts. And it's really, you know, I know I pound the podium all the time and say you could make Massachusetts safer overnight without having to pass one law and without having to infringe on anybody's rights simply by enforcing the laws on the books. And don't, you know, I mean, the prosecutors were looking for 10 to 15 years for this guy.
Right.
And the judge knocked it down to 5 years yeah. with probation. It's, you know, it's crazy. It really is.
And, you know, and I mean, listen, we could talk about, you know, some prosecutorial decisions, you know, a veteran who is, you know, in legal possession of guns that he purchased in Arizona, but they're illegal in Massachusetts. He's held behind bars because the prosecutor says he's too dangerous to let go. I mean, we've got those cases too, right? But in this case, you're right. The Middlesex County DA asked for basically double the sentence that this judge handed down. And this wasn't this guy's first rodeo, right? I mean, that's the thing. He had, I believe, a 2014 conviction for another violent felony. You know, so it seems like every time this guy is free and is out, you know, among society, he commits a violent offense. So why this judge would knock that sentence down to half of what prosecutors were asking for is beyond me. But again, as you say, there's that soft on crime ideology. Let's get tough on legal gun owners. Violent felons, not so much, right?
Yeah, and I would like to point out one thing. A lot of people were worried about, you know, crowding in jails. And that's one of the reasons they would release criminals that were, you know, petty criminals out of jail because of the overcrowding. That is not the case in Massachusetts. We have empty jails in Massachusetts. In fact, they just closed one. And I spoke to Sheriff McDonald up in Plymouth County House of Correction, which is the last of all the county house of corrections in Massachusetts that still works with ICE detain, honors ICE detainers. And so they have about 300 inmates that are being held for ICE, and then the other 200 or 300 sentenced inmates. But that jail can hold 1,600 people, and there's roughly 500 or 600 people at any given time. It's the reason why Massachusetts incarceration costs is the highest in the nation. It's about $300,000 per year to incarcerate someone because the jails are empty, but you still got to pay the rent, you still got to pay the guards, you still got to pay the utilities and everything else, the insurance, and yet there's nobody there.
Yeah.
And this type of person is being cut and released to the streets to reoffend. And it didn't take him long. It was only a matter of months before he started shooting up Memorial Boulevard. And Cam, we see these stories every single day. And you almost, we joke and say, hey, what's the over under? This guy has prior charges and prior felon in possession with of a gun. When he was arrested for shooting at the police 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. he had prior felon in possession of a gun charge.
Yeah, yeah. And like you say, I mean, the jails aren't empty because of a lack of crime, right? The jails right. are empty because of a lack of will to put violent criminals behind bars.
Yeah.
You know, and then let's talk about the other aspect of this situation, right? The armed citizen right. who helped stop this guy. You know, you got that banner behind you right now, the Civil Rights Coalition. And mm-hmm. coming up in November, we've got this referendum to undo Chapter 135, the omnibus mm-hmm. gun control bill that was put in place a couple of years ago. Governor Maura Healey made this an emergency so it could go into effect right away because you guys had gathered enough signatures to challenge this at the ballot. And then immediately after declaring an emergency, she suspends, most of the law. Well, we're going to give it another 18 months, even though it was just an emergency.
Which, by the way, that's expired, and they still haven't figured out what the law is going to do about, you know, the licensing thing. Yeah, it's crazy. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
We're going to talk to you about that maybe in a couple of weeks here. But, you know, one of the things that Chapter 135 did, it established this whole new training regime for people who want to get their license to carry. And there was, again, a lot of confusion about what this training regime is going to look like. Instructors had to be certified by the state of Massachusetts. It's become more difficult. It's become harder for you to get that license to carry in the state of Massachusetts, right?
Oh, there is so much confusion around, do you need to have live fire? And if so, what is the curriculum? And again, there's no curriculum that's been released yet, even though they had 18 months to work on it. And even though they had all these requirements, all they've done is add a few bullet points and say, you must include this. And if you did classes in the past, we're going to allow you to keep doing them as long as you include these slides or this subject matter. And it is a joke. It's really a farce. And so my hat's off to this Marine veteran who engaged this shooter in public yesterday, because he was taking a serious risk to himself. And as well as, you know, I'm sure there's people out there that want to see him brought up on charges. That's the sentiment in Massachusetts, is if you defend yourself or friends or neighbors or loved ones or your community with a firearm, you should also be brought up on charges. And we see it all the time. I see we had a gentleman who defended himself and friends at a peaceful pro-Israel rally in not far from here in Newton a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And he ended up catching charges for, being attacked and using a gun to fire one shot and then administering first aid to the guy after that while they waited for first responders to show up. So that's the sentiment on the street in Massachusetts and DAs throughout the state. If you're involved in a self-defense shooting, you will be arrested. You will be prosecuted. So I hope that doesn't happen for this guy who was very brave. And he stood, I don't know if he was side by side or not, but I don't know all the details yet, but he fired shots to help save his community. And that's exactly what the Second Amendment is about. And here, Chapter 135 puts all kinds of encumbrances and restrictions and, treats our natural rights as a privilege. That's really the way it works in Massachusetts. You don't have a right to keep and bear arms. You have a privilege that is granted by the legislature, and they come up with all the conditions of that. And once you jump through all the hoops and you check all the boxes and you get in some towns, you got to still give an interview to the chief of police and tell him why you want to exercise your right to keep and bear arms. Once you've done all that, you've paid the fee and probably 3 months have elapsed minimum, you may get your license to carry. And then, you know, if you carry it, there's places now you can and can't go. You know, municipal buildings are off limits, state buildings are off limits. And, you know, you're taking a risk every day, just hoping you don't run afoul of the checkerboard of unconstitutional restrictions on your God-given rights.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, I want to talk about Chapter 135 and the efforts to repeal that the next time we have you on the program. But I also want to ask you, you know, I'm down here in Virginia. We had, I guess, sort of our own version of Chapter 135 passed this year. It wasn't one bill. It was like 13 different gun control bills that they enacted, including, you know, bans on so-called assault firearms. That's how they designated in Virginia. Large capacity magazines, which I think they arbitrarily defined as anything over 15 rounds, and a number of other restrictions. And, you know, I was thinking about this because you went through this. I remember when Chapter 135 was getting ready to go into effect and the surge of customers that you had at Cape Gunworks. We're seeing this in Virginia. I talked with Mark Oliver from the National Shooting Sports Foundation last week, and the number of NICS checks on firearm transfers up 80% in Virginia compared to the same time last year. I think Virginia was number two in the country in terms of total NICS checks for firearm transfers, which is, you know, pretty astounding. I mean, I think it was even ahead of California last month. Wow. So clearly we're seeing that same kind of surge, right? But come July the 1st, these new laws go into effect. And I'm curious, I mean, do you have any advice for FFLs who right now, I'm sure, are running ragged, trying to keep things in stock? You know, what should they be doing to prepare for that day when all of a sudden they can't sell the most popular rifles in the country anymore? They can't sell commonly owned magazines.
Yeah, it's an interesting business we're in because the spikes and valleys are really, they're real, right? Yeah. And, you know, trying to survive the downturns of this market and then be in position and have inventory, and then all of a sudden the spike happens and things fly off the shelf and restock is tough. We did go through it, as you mentioned, a couple of years ago ourselves, and we were ordering pallets of guns. We weren't ordering guns by the delivery. We were ordering by the pallet, you know, and LTL freight trucks were bringing guns to our shop because everybody, the demand was so high, as you see in Virginia. And what I would say is, number one, they should look at the law and see if there's a way, you know, to preload. Like, one of the things we did was I'm not going to say exploit it, but we took advantage of the way the code was written and the law was written. So as long as it was in our inventory prior to that ban date, we could continue to sell off what we had in stock for months afterwards. So that kind of helped us get through. And that's why we preloaded. We were just getting as many guns in as we possibly could, knowing that after the ban date, people are still going to have a demand. They couldn't get in, or for whatever reason, or didn't even know about it. Amazingly, some people didn't know up until the last week, if you will. And we were able to take payment for that prior to the ban date. But then we would process the NICS check and everything else down the road just to get more customers through the door and you know, help facilitate that. So once it was in the building, we were able to sell it. So I would advise them to look into that and see if that's a possibility in Virginia, because if it is, that wave, you can ride it a couple months after the Band-Aid goes into effect. But yes, you're going to have to get creative. Unfortunately, this law, you know, people mock us and have mocked us for decades in Massachusetts because we do business in this blue state that, you know, is very hostile to us. And we say all the time, like, hey, guys, you know, this is where the fight is. This is ground zero. And this spreads like a cancer, you know. And as you mentioned, we got Virginia, we got Rhode Island, we've seen it go to Maryland, we've seen Colorado, you know, which used to be a very good pro-gun state, has gone the same way. And they're just accelerating this throughout many other states as well. And that's where the battle ends up if we don't stop it where the battle is. So my long story short is, you're going to have to get creative. Like, we are, same thing, we have assault style weapons with all these features and everything else. And that's where the featureless rifle comes in, you know, and people are like, oh my gosh, this is an abomination to have to buy a gun like this. No kidding. But we can at least sell it. You know what I mean? And that's the way you adjust. You have to get creative. You have to learn what you can and can't do within the law in order to stay in business. Because otherwise, your business that was going along like this now is going to go along like this. And if you don't make those adjustments, you're going to get to go home and spend more time with the family. That's the reality of the situation. And, you know, we've had to make several adjustments. We sell fixed mag AR-15s now because they fit in that kind of loophole, if you will, of they can't be considered an assault weapon because they have a fixed magazine. So, you know, yeah, it sucks. We have to do business this way. But on the other hand, we have a product to sell that once this all gets fixed, and there's no doubt in my mind it will, at least people will have something in the meantime that they can buy and, you know, that gun shops can sell and stay, a good business. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, a viable business. So.
Well, and I know that, you know, Virginia, the ban is basically a features test, right? So we probably will see the featureless rifles come to Virginia. And then they'll try to come back, I'm sure, in the next year or two and maybe propose just a flat out ban on gas operated semi-automatic firearms like we saw Democrats try to do in New Mexico this year. It ultimately failed. But that's, you know, I think that's the where the gun control lobby wants to take this debate is, all right, stop the features test and let's just go for a full semi-auto ban. Right. Because that's what they really want in the end anyway. But I do appreciate the advice. And I, you know, I've got some friends who are FFLs here in the state. And I mean, it is crazy times right now. As you say, they're ordering pallets of firearms just trying to keep up with the demand. So I think the advice is good. And, you know, hopefully we will get through this. Hopefully the Supreme Court will take a hardware case sooner rather than later, strike down these gun bans, and we can start to restore some Second Amendment sanity in places like Massachusetts. But I know, again, you're trying to do that right now with the Civil Rights Coalition. And I want to let folks know, not just Massachusetts residents, but, you know, if you're in Rhode Island right now and you're dealing with this a bill that would ban the possession of your AR-15, coming up on June 13th, the Gun Owners Action League holding its Goal 250 event, celebrating America's 250th birthday. I'll be there in Boxborough, Massachusetts. Toby, you're going to be there as well, right?
Yep. I'll be there. I'm one of the speakers as well as you, and a great lineup of people speaking. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a great time.
Yeah, you can find out more information at goal.org. But if you have not had a chance to meet Toby in person, shake his hand and thank him for all the work that he's doing, that'll be a great opportunity. And as for folks mocking you, I'm gonna pull out one of my phrases that my Massachusetts relatives used to use. You got to be wicked stupid to mock somebody for, again, fighting the good fight in a battleground state like this. If it weren't for people like you, Toby, you know, Second Amendment supporters in Massachusetts would be hosed, right? I mean, if every gun store owner in Massachusetts said, you know what, I'm going to move to New Hampshire, I'm moving to Tennessee, I'm moving to greener pastures, I mean, there would be hundreds of thousands of Massachusetts residents who would simply be out of luck. There'd be no way for them to exercise their Second Amendment rights. As restricted as it is, at least they have places like Cape Gunworks to go and to, you know, again, purchase these constitutionally protected products.
Yeah, the saying in defensive firearms training, I'm sure you've heard it many times, is no one is coming to save you, right? And we feel that when it comes to our rights here in Massachusetts. It's not, you know, it's true. And I even get it, like why the national gun groups pay very little attention to Massachusetts. And that is because our courts are horrible. The First Circuit Court of Appeals is the worst circuit in the nation. You can't come up with a three-judge, you know, pool that would give you or render a pro-Second Amendment decision. So unless they start to get a conscience and start to apply the Bruin methodology or the Heller methodology faithfully, it's going to be more of the same. They're going to uphold these unconstitutional gun bans. And so it's better use of resources to deal with the Fifth Circuit, the Seventh even, or the Ninth Circuit are much better courts than the First. We see the Third Circuit out of New Jersey is doing, you know, is now probably a pro-2A court. So, you know, I get it. But that doesn't mean we should all sit back and complain. It means we need to roll up our sleeves, put our boots on and go do the work, because frankly, no one's coming to save us. So if it isn't us, then who's it going to be? And if it isn't now, then when? Like, there's no other time but now. And so this is before the voters on November 3rd, as you pointed out, to repeal Chapter 135. It is a veto, a citizen's petition that 100,000 people signed in 5 weeks without any paid signature gatherers. And we got on the ballot. And as you pointed out, Maura Healey got nervous because this was going to be suspended until the election. So she signed the emergency preamble, and I would argue violated her oath of office in doing so. But that remains to be up to the voters on November 3rd.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, next time we have you on, I want to talk about what the Civil Rights Coalition is doing. And and because really, this shows the power of the grassroots and what can be accomplished in a state that is so hostile to the Second Amendment. Even getting this, on the ballot, I think was a huge victory for gun owners. And it really, frankly, I think it scared the governor to see the power of the grassroots there in the state. So next time we have you on, can we talk about that?
Absolutely. Anytime you want.
All right. And if folks want more information about the Civil Rights Coalition or about Cape Gunworks, how do they find you, Toby?
Yeah, make sure they put in thecivilrightscoalition.com. And you can sign up for our newsletter. You can sign up to volunteer if you're local or even if you're not. And you can also donate there because all the other, usual suspects are on the other side donating to the opposition. So we need to raise resources to fight this for yard signs and to run a good campaign until Election Day. And CapeGunworks.com for all of your online shopping needs. We'll take good care of you from behind the enemy lines. We also have free state versions of everything that we sell throughout the country. So I appreciate you allowing me to plug that as well, Cam. And we're happy to help any way we can. And, we're all in this together. I believe that the stronger we get in banned states and we can come to each other's aid and all kind of link arms, the rest of the country will follow. So
absolutely.
That's what we're doing.
Yep. Well, thank you for your time today, Toby. And let's talk again here in a couple of weeks, but again, thanks for everything you do. I'm so glad we could have you on the show today.
My pleasure. Anytime. Thanks so much, Cam.
My thanks to Toby for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here in a couple of weeks. All right. On to today's Armed Citizen story. Well, yes, our armed citizen story. We won't do our recidivist report because we've already done that, but I do have another armed citizen story for you, as well as our good deed of the day. The armed citizen story, a little bit different than what we normally cover, but, the right to keep and bear arms does not just encompass firearms, maybe the most common arm that is protected by the Second Amendment, but, knives are covered too, right? So here's the headline. The Bolton Hill woman fights off intruder who climbed into her bed. This was in Baltimore, Maryland, in the Bolton Hill neighborhood. And the woman who, again, is sleeping when a stranger crawls in bed with her was able to fight him off and then used a decorative knife that was hanging on the wall to send this guy scurrying away in the middle of the night. Rachel Cooper, talking to the Baltimore Banner, said she woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, said she heard a noise. She thought it was her cat, but then she realized there was a guy at the foot of her bed, and he lights a cigarette, then he climbs on top of her, begins to sexually assault her. She resists, manages to get out from underneath him. She runs into the hallway. There's a knife, again, a decorative knife, but it's a knife up on the wall. She grabs it because that's the only thing she has. And I guess, it's dark. The guy didn't know that this was a decorative knife. He saw her all of a sudden. She's got a blade in her hand. See, he takes off running. Just as the house alarm kicks in and her housemate grabbed the phone to call police, Rachel Cooper told the Banner, she said, I'd rather be shot at, possibly even shot, than just lie there and let him do whatever he wanted. So she says she threw elbows. She hit him. She'd actually knocked a lens out of his glasses before she got to the knife. But again, that didn't stop him. What stopped him was when he realized, she could stab me. That's when he took off. If it was just, you know, brute force against brute force. This guy thought he had the upper hand against Rachel Cooper. When all of a sudden, Rachel Cooper had a weapon in her hand, this guy had somewhere else he desperately needed to be. Cooper said that security camera footage from her house and nearby home shows the suspect sprinting down the street. He actually tried to get into another apartment about a block away. So maybe he thought, well, what are the odds? I'm going to encounter two armed citizens in one night. Baltimore Police Department says the investigation remains open and active. They don't have a suspect in custody. You know, and I hope that Rachel Cooper, first of all, I'm glad that she's safe. No one should have to go through what she went through. And I'm glad that she had the presence of mind, A, to fight back, but B, to grab that decorative knife off the wall. Because I truly believe that based on her description of events, that is what stopped this attack. If it was just, you know, again, fists and feet versus fists and feet, I think this guy would have continued attacking her. But when she had a knife, that tipped the scales in her favor. I don't know Rachel Cooper, never met her, probably never will. I don't know what her thoughts about gun ownership are, but I hope that she is at least considering upgrading from a decorative knife in terms of a personal defense weapon. Whether that be a really sharp knife, whether that be a handgun for her bedside, whatever. And I know, you know, again, the odds of this happening again to Rachel Cooper may be long. But lightning sometimes does strike twice. And I just hope that this serves as a the impetus for Rachel Cooper to get armed, to get protected. At least something with a little bit more protection than a decorative knife hanging on the wall. And I honestly hope this story and what happened to Rachel Cooper prompts other women in the Baltimore area to think more seriously about their safety. You know, you can be in what you think is a secure home, right? You've got the doors are locked, the alarm is on, but that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody can't force their way inside and do terrible things before police get there. So, yes, lock your doors. Yes, a security system is the smart thing to have. But you also need to be prepared if those measures don't stop somebody from breaking into your home, trying to sexually assault you, trying to harm your kids, trying to hurt you. Those are all realistic possibilities, sadly. And it doesn't matter if we live in a gated community, if we live in a row house in a high crime neighborhood, no place is 100% immune to these types of incidents. All right, on to today's good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, we're able to do the right thing. You know, yesterday we talked about this Miami teenager who saved the life of a retired sheriff's deputy when his apartment caught fire. This teen getting a $6,000 scholarship wants to become a law enforcement officer. I swear I didn't go looking for a similar story today, but I found one out of Iowa. A Dowling Catholic student rescuing a woman from a burning home in Johnston, Iowa. And again, right place, right time, willing able to do the right thing. Merrick Decimaz is 17 years old. He said it was Sunday evening. He's playing golf at a local golf club, and he sees flames from this nearby house. He said, we were kind of shocked. We yelled out, there's a fire. But no one was really there. We didn't know what was going on. His mom, Agnieszka Pieta, was also there with her son and said, I started screaming, help, fire, help, fire. She said, but nobody was out. So Decimaz and his dad, Douglas K, jumped over the golf course fence, ran over to the house to help. Merrick Decimos was the first to reach the front door. He said, I started knocking on the windows, like hitting as hard as I could to see if somebody was there. And he spotted a woman inside. He said, she runs over and she opens the door and she's shocked. According to KCCI in Iowa, just a few seconds later, a propane tank exploded. And the fire goes from the deck of the home to the roof of the home. Now you got smoke pouring inside the house. The woman inside tries to go back in because she wanted to rescue her cat. And I mean, again, as a animal lover, I completely get that. But Desimaz and at this point, a Amazon delivery driver who had also seen what was going on and stopped to help. They were able to pull her out of the home, away from the danger. The fire chief, Percy Coleman, commended Desmond's actions. He said, you know, getting around in a timely manner was certainly key, and I think it's safe to say really saved her life. The homeowner's cat, by the way, survived, was found safe in the basement, but the home is a total loss. Cause of the fire is still under investigation. You know, I mean, it is heartbreaking to think about losing all your possessions, but thank God that no lives were lost. And again, it sounds like that was largely because of the actions of Merrick Decimos, his dad, Douglas K, and again, that Amazon delivery driver who KCCI did not name. All three of those individuals, you know, reacting to the flames, coming to the aid of this woman, and get her out of the home all before the first fire crews had ever arrived on scene. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. We thank all three of these individuals for their very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I'm sorry, I've got a big hornet trying to get inside my office here. That's why I'm a little distracted looking off to the side. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I do encourage you to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. And be sure to tune in tomorrow. We've got more for you coming up. Also, this afternoon in the 6 p.m. Eastern hour, I will be on Newsmax talking with my friend Carl Higbee for 2A Tuesdays. Looking forward to that as well. And looking forward to seeing you here again tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free. We'll